Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Nick Anastasio, story editor on Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Bad Batch. And you are listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
This is Aggressive Negotiations, and I am one of your hosts, John Mills. I am delighted, as always, to be joined by Jedi Master Matthew Rushing as we prepare for our commentary in this episode on the final episode of Season 1 of The Bad Batch, Kamino Lost. Matt, are you ready for the emotional ride that we know we're about to go on?
You know, John, just as I wasn't ready for Paradise Lost, I'm not ready for Kamino Lost. I mean, this is such a good episode. I cannot wait to revisit it. I've actually been tempted a few times to watch it before we do this commentary, just because, and I haven't. I have not given in. I've resisted temptation, and so I cannot wait to jump into this episode with you.
And I would love it if people would jump in to Apple Podcasts and give us a star rating and review. We would always appreciate it. There are roughly 4.27 billion Star Wars podcasts out there. You're choosing to listen to ours. We greatly, deeply appreciate it. And if you want to show us some of that love, we never ask for your money. We never ask for anything. We don't even have any, you know, anything to hawk here on the show, at least not yet. I don't know. Maybe we could. I mean, I'd offer to sell hair clippings, but yeah, I'm on an uphill battle on that one. So, you know, we would love a star rating and review. It would be great. You can interact with us on social media at the Jedi Masters on Twitter and look for the network, the Nerd Party, over on Facebook and Instagram. And I wasn't lying at the end of last episode when we finished Return to Kamino. That was an episode that ended perfectly and is exactly the way the first part of a two-parter should end, where when the credits went, I said, I want it now. That is how you know you have master storytellers sitting there guiding you, gently taking you through the process, and you know that you're about to hit something big. And with a title like Kamino Lost, what happened last episode? Rampart opened the salvo against Kamino, against Tipica City, and now we know that we're about to embrace that as the Batch and Omega are stranded there during the assault. So with that, of course, Disney Plus. Mr. Iger, we heard you. You said that you're interested in getting back to licensing and physical media, so I hold out hope for a 4K of...
We're holding you to that, Bob.
Yeah, you know... Yeah,
I know Bob's listening because he's a huge listener, and so
I, you know what? He can deny it all that he wants to, but I know he's listening.
Yeah, that's what we should do. Get T-shirts that say Bob Iger's favorite Star Wars podcast.
You know what? I'm on board with it, but I'm even more on board with giving everybody a countdown here on Disney Plus. Cue up your machines or cue it up in your head. We're going to do our best to give you theater of the mind here, as we always do. I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1. And when I say the word play, that means hit play. We're not kidding around. The word play means play. So here we go. Official countdown starting. 3, 2, 1, play. All right. Yes.
Disney Plus.
Lucasfilm logo. And yes. I love that
Lucas called it Lucasfilm Limited because he loved the British company sound. Instead of like Lucasfilm Incorporated, so much cooler. So much cooler.
I agree that it is. I would say that we're both a little biased on that one, but hey, that's just me.
So?
Touche. That's an excellent point in and of itself.
Kamino Lost.
I am so, as the episode opened up and you hear the alarms and you hear the weapons and then you get this shot of Rampart, just... Mm-hmm. As they rain destruction, and it, even the juxtaposition of the burning city on top of an ocean planet, that's one of those haunting artistic decisions that you just, I hadn't even considered that. But I want to draw special attention here as we're seeing, you know, they're running through the halls, they're getting knocked around. but those exterior shots of the city getting hit. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There's so much proper weight to everything. It feels like an actual structure mm-hmm. collapsing. Yep. It's amazing to me
yes.
that I'm seeing better effects editing in an animated series than in a lot of, I mean, Marvel shows or current Marvel movies that I'm getting.
Yes. Well, and a part of this too is that, you know, we've talked so much about the lighting and the cinematography and everything like that that they do in this show. And I think this episode encapsulates everything that we've talked about in this entire season of all that they've learned in Star Wars animation is coming to fruition here in this episode, where they are probably doing the hardest things that they've ever done, which is the destruction of an entire city on a water planet. And then, like you said, trying to create that weight to make it feel real.
And just seeing a clone trooper deliver the report to Rampart, yeah. it just drills in that
how messed up this is.
Well, it's not enough to serve the Empire. Mm-hmm. You have to show such complete loyalty to them, even as they're destroying something that you love.
Yes.
That's your own home. It's a very Soviet Union sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Comrade Stalin is the greatest. Stalin's dead. Oh, I hate Comrade Stalin. It's all about
exactly.
the next guy. So,
which is funny because actually the new season of Jack Ryan was kind of about that season three. So there's a lot of that in there. But no, I think you're 100% right that, you know, this is, I think, one of the reasons. And this really, I think, lays an incredible foundation as to why, you know, as we'll move into the season two, why so many clones are, they begin to question Order 66. They begin to question what's going on.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The moment the Empire overplays its hand, quote unquote, and playing into that whole idea of, oh, well, they're going to wake up and it's going to make a difference. And that soul crushing realization of, no, they'll just wake up and realize they should have woken up previous to this moment.
Yeah.
But something I don't know if we've hit on this before or what we've realized or anything like that, but it just hit me. And I feel like it's the first time I've recognized it. But the design of the droid, the bottom part of him is actually reminiscent of the Black Hole, which was a Disney movie that came out.
That's a good point. Yeah.
If you look at the way it's reminiscent of Max and Bob.
Yeah. And it's a good point.
Dang it. If this is the first time I'm recognizing that, I could kick myself because I love that movie, The Black. I'm even one of the 10 people in the world that's read the novelization by Alan Dean Foster for
Pete's sake. That's awesome.
Right? Yeah.
So again, too, as the city sinks into the water, the fact that you have fire and water and smoke and all of these things happening with the lighting and the animation, it's just it is an incredible testament to everything that they've learned. Because, I mean, when you think all the way back to the Clone Wars season one, there's absolutely no way they would have been able to do this, right?
Oh, no. Gosh, no.
And the beauty, too, of this right here, Omega is saving Crosshair's life. A man who has tried to hunt her down and kill her, basically, and she saves mm-hmm. his life. And I think there's something just so absolutely beautiful about that idea. And I think it sets up a beautiful arc then for us to go on as we look towards, you know, season two. So that's beautiful writing in the sense that they're not just thinking about this season, but they're thinking about the next season already, which is pretty awesome.
Yes, it is. And the idea here, too, of Crosshair sliding down on his back completely helpless, and he's still having trouble letting go of his loyalty, right? Even in this moment, and even though Hunter's face is covered, you can hear in the vocal performance, it's almost like, I can't believe you, man. Like,
right.
They open fire. They're destroying the city. Like, well, yeesh, you know?
Well, and it's like, you're on it, man. Like,
yeah.
you're here. They don't care about you. This is how little they care about you.
All you are is an asset to the Empire. Whether you're a clone, a droid, or a citizen, all you are is an... Oh, yeah. Sorry. I have to stop the cloning facilities themselves shorting out. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing in and of itself. Just tragic beauty.
Yeah, what makes it so tragically beautiful is the idea of all of it's Omega, and it's the Bad Batch here watching where they were born die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those cloning tubes are still full of clones.
Yes.
You know, and everything is dying here.
And they're watching it happen because the clear subtext is not only is their home going away, not only are those clones in the tubes dying, but they're never going to be, there's never going to be any more. Like they're seeing the moment that is the literal end of possibly ever having more brothers.
Yes.
Be born.
Yeah. It's a good point.
This is the end of that. Even if there are other cloners out there, it will never, this is going to seem like I'm putting it in a jokey way, but like the secret recipe is gone after this.
Yes. Well, and
Django
and
dies and then everything's over.
And then what makes that so interesting is because Omega would be the key to creating more clones because mm-hmm. she's a first generation clone unaltered, and therefore her DNA would allow cloners of the caliber of Kaminoans to be able to create more clones. Mm-hmm. So we're really setting up to just how much of an importance she still is to the story. Especially if people were to find out about who she is.
Mm-hmm. But even that idea too, just, and we've touched on this before, just that so long as she and Boba Fett are alive, they're extremely special.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely special because, like you said, they're the key. So long as they're alive, it's the spark of Kamino is there. As monstrous as what the Kaminoans do, honestly, you know, there's still that sort of, you know, the Django's legacy is alive. The clone's legacy is alive. They're all, so long as they're alive, like it, the importance of carrying on and, you know, memory and tradition and the past feeding into the present and the future, like that's all there.
I also really love this whole idea of, you know, Crosshair and Hunter having this argument about, you know, soldiers follow orders, and Hunter saying, well, blind allegiance is not allegiance at all, you know, and mm-hmm. this is the key argument between these characters, and this is what it means to actually have choice and free will instead of only being able to follow orders.
And Crosshair, additionally, they're all going to die here because of your failed leadership. You can tell Crosshair feels like if everybody had just been better clones, the mm-hmm. Empire wouldn't have felt the need to do this. He still isn't seeing that this was what right. was going to happen no matter what. They right. happen to be a part of this story, but even if they didn't exist, this is exactly what the Empire was going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I like what you're saying there about him, you know, thinking that if they had just been better clones, you know, the problem is they're made exactly what they were meant to be, which is they can think independently, you know, mm-hmm. which makes them superior to droids.
Yes.
And that's exactly why they all had the chips installed in the first place, right? It's because mm-hmm. Palpatine absolutely knew that they would be a problem if they were doing exactly what Clone Force 99 and other clones are doing.
And Palpatine was always thinking of robbing the possibilities of problems for himself. As Obi-Wan says to Luke, the Emperor knew as I did, if Anakin were to have any offspring, they would be a threat to him.
Exactly.
Palpatine knows the clones are a threat. They eventually all have to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And we get back, there's the argument again, Wrecker trying to make Crosshair see sense, and we double back to an argument we had in the very first episode of Tech being the one saying, oh, it's just his nature. That's right. Just who he is. So in a sense, what's bizarre is Tech is this, like a determinist sort of mindset where it's like, if you boil his argument down, the batch is doing what they do, not because of what we're talking about with free will, but because that's just in their nature to do it.
Exactly.
And Crosshair's just doing what's in his nature to do it. So Tech, I think, is a classic example of somebody who gets to an end point, but takes a different path from what I would, or what Hunter did, or what Wrecker did. And it's interesting because that shows that everybody can get to the same point, but they don't all, you know, again, to call back to a line from another character in the live action original trilogy, you know, when Leia's talking to Luke about Han, you know, he has to follow his own path. No one can choose it for him.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's such an important thing too, when you think about these characters in particular, is this idea of nature and nurture, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that made the clones different was because of their association of being led by Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yes,
you know, we see that from the very beginning. The very first episode of the Clone Wars that, you know, was broadcast on television was Yoda telling the clones how individual they are, in spite of the fact that they look the same. Looks are deceiving. Don't trust them, right? And it's really about their personalities and all of these things. And I think that's the thing that makes this so special and really cool, is that we're actually watching the progression of themes that started all the way back at the very first episode of the Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm. And I want to give a special nod to the fact that we had a big old sea creature, because one of my favorite things about Star Wars from the very start was the presence of just weird ass creatures that would just show up, because that is actually how the world works, where you just, trust me, I live in a place where you're going along and it's like, oh, look, a venomous snake.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, a crocodile.
Okay. No, no, we're alligators.
Alligators.
Oh, there are some crocodiles, but that's mainly because of jabronis that, the typical story. This will make a good pet. Oh, I beg to differ, champ. I love that Crosshair, we reintroduce everything about what's important about this lab, because Crosshair hasn't been in it yet.
Right.
So I think it's terrific because it's a two-parter. It gives you that refresher. It's an in-script reason to recap what somebody might not remember from the previous episode.
Yeah.
Which is very good television episodic explanation. You know, any long-running show has to be able to work back in an explanation that's not going to annoy the people who do remember, but also edify the people that don't.
Right. Well, and I think the other part is that it does help the entire audience remember that Omega herself is very special and is a key to this whole thing, and that as we move, you know, through this episode and then on into season two, keeping her safe is really important.
And this argument between Crosshair and Hunter, again, you know, this is what happens when you let a kid call the shots. Well, Crosshair, you were following. Like, Crosshair is that member of the party, and we'll decide whether to bleep this or not, who just constantly is. All they do is complain. And it's never good. If there's a problem, oh, yeah, well, what did you expect was going to happen? It's like people like this are in every group, and you just every so often feel like looking at them and going, you know, you went along with it. So maybe just shut your mouth. Just be quiet for a hot minute. So it's like I can understand Hunter, like what's really going on in Hunter's heart is he just wants to sock Crosshair in the face really hard.
Well, and I think the thing that makes this so difficult, right, and even as a viewer, we are so frustrated because we want this character to see the light of day, right?
Yeah,
and very few times in Star Wars have we seen a character continue to choose evil in light of everything that this character is being shown. And that's a difficult place to be. And I think it's an important subject for Star Wars to broach, which is to see that there are going to be people who continue to choose this. And that's all of the people who, like a Rampart, right? They're choosing this because that's what they want.
Yeah.
They desire what the power that it's going to give them. They believe in it for that reason, you know? And what's interesting is that Crosshair has reasons that are driven by the fact that he can't choose otherwise, because his connection to the Empire and the Emperor and his mission have been accentuated through manipulation of his brain. And so then the question becomes, with this episode specifically, what will it take to break this man so that he would choose? You know,
well,
and
the conditioning.
That's a scary, exactly. And that's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, and but there is that idea that if you truly love somebody, you have to be patient with them even when they're being a dumbass.
Yeah, it's very true.
And that's essentially the theme of Crosshair here in season one, is even if the person is being... And if we're called to love all, serve all, then aren't we supposed to be patient with everybody?
Right. Well, and
even if they disagree with us on the core principles of things,
yes.
Aren't we supposed to be patient?
Yeah. Well, and I think that also is a good reminder for ourselves, right? Is that many a times we're the people that people are having to put up with and love. And so...
Well, not me. Never me. I'm always, I mean, you know, it's a burden. It's
sure.
It's a joyous
sure.
burden though.
Yeah.
I,
yeah.
You know,
that's what it is.
See, you just agreed. Thank you. I have that on record.
Yes. Yes. If you took that as agreement,
makes me as buoyant as a medical capsule going up to the surface of Kamino.
Yeah. This is great. I love this. This is so Star Wars. This actually reminds me slightly of the whole Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Let me get in the refrigerator moment, right? You know?
You just made so many people angry by talking affectionately.
But I mean, it's the same
kind
of moment. I mean, come on. The prospect of their survival here is just as bad as Indy in a refrigerator.
Well, and introducing the peril that of Omega, like I won't lie, we all care so deeply about Omega by this point. This scene where the droid has to rescue her, this is your ultimate test as a viewer.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's a bad way to put it, I guess, but the ultimate test of, is this show succeeding in making me care about that character, is when this happens, did I feel fear? Did I sit there and care very much about what happened? Yes. And I still do while we're watching it. I mean, I hate when cards like this get pulled, and I'm not trying to pull this card, but yeah, you know, being a dad and like thinking of what a kid is going through, trapped, you know, you wouldn't ever want a kid to go through this under any circumstances.
Yeah.
And that,
well, I think that's a really good
point. Line from the droid, your path is clear.
Mm-hmm.
I have completed my objective, but your path is clear. That's a classic Star Wars line. There's added meaning to that.
And this is also classic Star Wars, right?
Yep.
I'm going to choose to do the much more difficult thing, which is self-sacrifice. To save a friend. And I think that's such a interesting point here in the story. And I think one of the things is that it shows you just how much this character has learned, right? From the clones that she's been spending all her time with. I also love here that Crosshair repays his debt, so he's not in Omega's debt anymore, because I don't think he could stand it if he was.
I also love the shot of Wrecker drawing his gun on Crosshair.
You know? Yes, I think that's fantastic.
Trust but verify. Always, always.
Well, he's already said, you guys are wrong, I'm right, the Empire's the best, screw you guys. And so it's like, of course you shouldn't trust him.
But the thing is, even the shot composition of them talk about going to the Marauder and everything, the camera is placed so that we see Crosshair in the foreground and we can tell on his expression. There's great conflict in him. Mm-hmm. How does he feel about what's happening right now?
I sense great conflict in you.
Yeah.
There is no conflict.
Obi-Wan once thought as you do. I would say that this shot over Omega's shoulder, looking at the smoke on the water, and I will resist singing that line as hard as it is. That shot, very evocative of the Jedi Temple burning. And this shot of all of them looking out, classic family shot in Star Wars. This is the type of shot I would be like, yeah, frame that for me. Even with the old sourpuss Crosshair in the background.
So difficult.
I made my decision. Yeah. The writing again. Mm-hmm. Why can't I get this on other live action shows and multiple properties? You know, we want different things. That doesn't mean we need to be enemies. It's like, wow, look, a terrific lesson for people to learn, regardless of your age.
Well, I think it's one of the most poignant lessons of this entire season, and it speaks directly to the situation that we're in now and the situation that we've seen throughout history, right? And that's the issue that has been created, especially with the Empire, which is that if you're not for me, you're against me. It's exactly what Anakin said to Obi-Wan on Mustafar. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. So
I got to ask you, as Omega turns, and you know, you're still their brother, Crosshair. You're my brother too. What a just soul-crushing line for somebody to hear, right? Like, talk about kill him with kindness sort of thing. But I got to ask you, when this scene happened, was your first thought, okay, Crosshair's back next season? Or was it, how's he going to get it? Like, where were you with his fate?
I actually really loved his fate, actually. I thought it was great because it was one of the first times that Star Wars had gone in the direction of no redemption for this character, at least yet. So,
and here's another question. When you saw this shuttle come in and where it landed, did you also have a giggle and then an, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, are they doing it? Are they doing it? Did you have the same reaction?
Yes. Yes, there's a lot to love in this whole thing. There were Republic Commandos, and we are here on Mount Tantus, you are leading a Kaminoan scientist there, which immediately makes you think of the fact that the Empire is very interested in controlling cloning still, which of course ties all the way to the sequel trilogy, and of course even the Mandalorian too. So... I think it's amazing. It's such a good end.
It's a fantastic end, and when I saw them flying in, it was literally such a giddy love mark moment where I saw it and I said, I cannot believe I'm seeing what I'm seeing. It is akin to when Rebels brings Thrawn in, and I go, no, really? Is that like, don't you toy with me? Don't you toy with me? You make this what I think it is. And I, and yes, the whole idea of how each piece can be even better than the last, but also in its superior nature, help support and enrich what came before. Bad Batch, with that one scene, all of a sudden makes itself so integral to the entire story. This is beyond world building. This is now key piece of the puzzle built, and you know it's a key piece of the puzzle just in that one scene.
Well, and I think the beauty of this is that it became very clear to me with the Bad Batch, especially, but even things that we were doing with The Mandalorian, is that these series were ways that we could tie things together more cohesively throughout all of Star Wars. Again, from the prequel trilogy all the way to the sequel trilogy, that this was trying to find ways to make all of these things make sense. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really fun. But more importantly than that, I think the Bad Batch succeeds in creating a story which is interesting to follow because of the place that these characters are in. And what's great about this series is just about, you know, the only other series that's like this, right, is Rogue One and Andor, in the sense of, like, they had characters to which we had no idea what their history is going to be, and therefore you're watching it and you're thinking, where is this going to go? What's going to happen to them? Because anything can happen to them. And so I love that about this show. And again, as we look towards the, you know, season two now, the fact that, you know, season two has started for us, we're really enjoying that season. And a lot of these thematic elements are playing out even further in that season. It's fantastic. And so hopefully, you know, everybody's enjoyed the fact that we've been doing these commentaries. And, you know, I'm excited to dive into some other Star Wars topics, but this was a lot of fun.
I agree. And I will cap off what you're saying by saying that Bad Batch does not presume its role and its importance. It earns it. And that is what makes it a phenomenal show. Is this is not something being released that says, yeah, you have to care about it because, you know, it's got the label on it. It's saying, I'm going to earn your love. And it does. And that's why rewatching season one, especially as season two is underway, has been such an incredible treat. But a real treat, Matt, is when people interact with you online. So where can people find you out there in the wilds of the internet?
So you could find me all over the place on social media. The name you'll want to look for is MattRushing02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero are the places that I am most active. And so I'd love to interact with you in any of those places. You can also find me here on the network with a completed show called Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, talking through every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then over on the TFM network, doing a lot of shows. One is the 602 Club. John Mills is a frequent guest over there, as well as the bonus shows that we do together, Snyder Cuts, as well as Assembling Avengers. So please look for that. You can also find me doing Literary Treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek, The Orb about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Warp 5 about Star Trek Enterprise, Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds, and The Artificial Tango, which we are now covering currently covering the third season of Star Trek Picard. So you want to check that out. But John, you know, maybe people want to lament the loss of Kamino with you. Where can they find you?
Oh, you can find me as Kessel Junkie, an unaltered clone making his way on the wilds of the internet. A lot of times, though, I'd say that it's more fun to hang out on Letterboxd. That's really the social network that I'm sort of like even when I give up other social networks for a time, Letterboxd is the one I stick on because you just talk about movies and I love to do that. And speaking of talking of movies, you can also find me here on the network co-hosting a show called House Lights, where we look at the work of directors through different lenses, phases, blah, blah, blah. We come up with all sorts of crazy combinations because, let's be honest, we're doing this for love of the game, so why not find a reason to love the game? And with that said, Master Rushing, I think it's time to close these negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.